shall move to questions without notice. Are there any questions? I'll give the call to the Honourable the Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. Well, perhaps just on indulgence first, can I extend to the Prime Minister and to Jodie, I'm sure on behalf of the whole House, our congratulations and best wishes to you. We look forward to our version of the Royal Wedding sometime in the near future. I'll be there throwing roses out in front of you, Prime Minister, whatever it takes to get an invite to the gala wedding. Mr Speaker, my question is to the Minister for Immigration. Earlier today I spoke to Andrew, a member of the family whose mother Svetlana was brutally murdered by Tony Kalasar, one of the 149 criminals the Minister released. He is disgusted that despite the Minister's undertakings, no one has contacted the family. They fear the murderer turning up at their home. Why hasn't this family been contacted, as the Minister and Deputy Prime Minister promised?
Give a call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Leader of the Opposition for this question. I acknowledge, all members of this place acknowledge, that the decision of the High Court to release those individuals, including the one the Leader of the
Order. Order. The Minister will pause. The Leader of the Opposition will raise a point of order.
Well, Mr Speaker, on relevance, the Minister continues this point about 149 being ordered by the High Court to be released. One person was ordered by the High Court to be released. You released another
order.
148, including...
Order. Attorney General, the member for Morton will cease objecting. The Leader of the House.
Mr Speaker, I just raise the earlier rulings you've given with respect to abuses of points of order.
Mm. We've been pretty clear on this point during the week about members will get the call to raise relevant points of order, points of order on relevance or other standing orders. It is not a time to then add additional questions or additional statements to the House. As we saw yesterday, that is not going to be tolerated and action will be taken. The Minister has been going for 16 seconds, so there will be no more points of order on relevance because under the standing orders only one can be taken and that has now been taken. Give the call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker. The Leader of the Opposition's question raises a very important issue, which I will turn to, but it is equally important that we conduct ourselves on the basis of facts and the law. As I have stated repeatedly...
Order.
As I have stated repeatedly, and I think
Member
we have
Deakin.
To acknowledge the effect of the High Court decision. Now, the government is committed to ensuring that all victims and their families are supported, noting, of course, the privacy restrictions and the fact that the vast majority of these victims are, of course, victims of breaches of state and territory laws, not Commonwealth laws. And that is why,
Order.
That is why this is a very serious issue. And
Order.
That is why.
The Member Groom. And the member
that
Paul
is
Bowman.
Why the Department of Home Affairs Victim Link Service was set up to coordinate contact from victims and their families to ensure that they are connected to law enforcement and essential support services in their state or territory so that they can feel safe and supported. And, Speaker, victims and their families who engage with Victim Link Service will be connected with state and territory police, victims of crime support services, and, of course, 1800 RESPECT. The government's national online.
Order.
Online. This is a very serious issue, Speaker.
Order. Members on my left, Member Babaka, the Leader of the Opposition has asked questions. Chief Government Whip will cease objecting.
This is a very important support service, which can also be accessed by calling the Home Affairs Global Service Centre at any time on 131881. Of course, community safety is our number one priority, and we've put in place mechanisms
Order.
To enable that we can support victims.
Order. The Leader of the Opposition is going to cease interjecting. It's far too much noise. I want to hear from the member for Newcastle.
Thank you, Speaker. My question's to the Prime Minister. How will Labor's cost of living tax cuts help Middle Australia? And what is standing in the way?
Give the call to the Prime Minister.
I thank the member for Newcastle for her question. I look forward to being back in Newcastle tomorrow with the member at an event there in the great industrial city of Newcastle. And she knows that the people of Newcastle and the Hunter will benefit from the fact that the tax cuts that passed this chamber earlier today will benefit every single taxpayer in Newcastle. How do we know that? Because they'll benefit every single taxpayer right around the country, all 13.6 million of them. We want people to earn more, and we want people to keep more of what they earn. Those opposite want people to work longer for less. We are doing the right thing for the right reasons. I note the interjections from the Shadow Treasurer. This is the bloke who earlier today had backbenchers moving amendments that were in his name.
And he was in the chamber.
And while he sat there in the chamber. And those amendments were to remove any reference to cost of living when it comes to tax policy.
Treasurer.
Any reference in the title to cost of living. And then of course, he voted for his second reading amendment. And the second reading amendment said this: the coalition is committed to going to the next election with a tax reform package that is in keeping with the stage three tax cuts.
Rollback.
Rollback is back, Mr. Speaker. Rollback is back. Moved by the Shadow Treasurer, because they then went on to vote for our legislation. The big tip is, if our legislation doesn't get carried, then there, Morrison tax cuts way back from 2019 would of course stand. So if they're better, why did they vote for our plan? They voted for our plan and changed their position, because our plan is the right plan. Our plan is the one that addresses living standards for low and middle income earners. Mr. Speaker, there have been 70 questions in this place this week so far, 72 now.
The Deputy Leader of the Opposition knows that language is unparliamentary. And I'm going to just ask a quickly withdraw so we can continue on with question time.
Mr. Speaker, I withdraw.
Give a call to the Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, 72 questions in this place, not a single question from the opposition about cost of living.
The member for Herbert
is warned. It says everything about where their priorities are. All about the politics, never about people. Never about assisting people. We on this side of the chamber will continue to stand up for the interests of people.
Order. The Prime Minister's time has concluded. Give a call to the Leader of the Opposition.
Well, Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Immigration Minister. Despite the Prime Minister's suggestions earlier that this is not a worthy question, I ask the Minister for Immigration why the family I referred to earlier, the victims of the who lost their mother and mother-in-law to a murderer, Tony Kelliser, why hasn't that family been contacted?
Give a call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Leader of the Opposition for his question. And I say again that my thoughts are, of course, with all of the victims, all of those affected by the riots. In terms of that family, I've spoken a little bit about the victim link approach, but if the Leader of the Opposition has the relevant contact details, I'd be very pleased. I'll be very pleased to speak with
order.
Any affected family members immediately after question time.
Order. Give a call. Order. Members on my left. And the House comes to order. Order. The member for Sturt will cease interjecting. Give a call to the honourable member for Corangamite.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Treasurer. What does the passage of the Albanese Labor government's cost of living tax cuts mean for working Australians and our economy? And what obstacles were overcome?
Give a call to the Treasurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the member for Corangamite, not just for her question, but for voting this morning to ensure that every Australian taxpayer gets a tax cut on the 1st of July, and more than that, Mr. Speaker, for ensuring that 85% of her own community, taxpayers in her own community, get a bigger tax cut to help with the cost of living. I'm very pleased and very proud to say, Mr. Speaker, that today Labor's cost of living tax cuts passed this House. And this means that Australian workers are now one step closer to a bigger tax cut for more people to help with the cost of living. It means all 13.6 million Australian taxpayers can now look forward to a tax cut on the 1st of July. It means 11.5 million of them can look forward to a bigger tax cut on the 1st of July. Now, Mr. Speaker, we did this for the truckies and for the teachers. We did it for the steel workers and the health workers. We did it for the nurses and the plumbers. We did it to support every Australian who works hard to provide for their loved ones and to get ahead. And we did it because we know people are under pressure from higher interest rates and persistent inflation and global economic uncertainty. And we saw the consequences of those three things in the jobs numbers which came out this morning, Mr. Speaker. Now, we saw unemployment tick up to 4.1%, and nobody likes to see that, Mr. Speaker, but we need some perspective here. As the member for Parramatta said in his contribution a moment ago, average unemployment under this government is 3.6%. Average unemployment under those opposite, 5.6%, Mr. Speaker, two percentage points different. 650,000 jobs created under this Prime Minister. The fastest job growth compared to any major advanced economy in that period, Mr. Speaker. And so what we're seeing in the economy is unemployment, which has ticked up today, but which is still extraordinarily low by historical standards. And what we saw today in the unemployment data makes our strategy even more important. Ease the pressure on people, repair the budget and invest in the future of the economy. And the tax cuts are central to this strategy. They are relief, they are reform and they are responsible. They're better for middle Australia and better for the economy. And they lay bare, Mr. Speaker, the main difference between this side of the House and that side of the House. Mr. Speaker, we want more people to earn more and to keep more of what they earn. Those opposite want people working longer for less. And after all of their whimpering, Mr. Speaker, after all their whimpering and all of their whinging, that's what this boils down to, Mr. Speaker. First they rolled over and now they want to roll back, Mr. Speaker. And the difference is we genuinely care about the cost of living pressures that people confront. We're doing something about it, even if they couldn't give us stuff.
Member for Mallee. No, before we move any further, the member for Warringah will get the call. I know it's Thursday. It's far too much noise. In that answer, the member for Casey interjected 8 times continuously. He will leave the chamber under 94A. He's been continually interjecting for the last 2 weeks. It is simply not acceptable for people not to show some restraint, just to continually to interject non-stop during a question and an answer. If this continues, more people will leave the chamber. Before I call the member for Warringah, I'd also like to welcome some guests to the parliament. I'm pleased to inform the House that present in the gallery today is the new ambassador of France to Australia, His Excellency Pierre-André Imbert. I'm also pleased to inform the House that there is a group visiting from Timor-Leste, including the Secretary of State for Social Communications, His Excellency Expedito Ximenez, and the President of Radio and Television of Timor-Leste, Mr. José Bello, as guests of the Assistant Foreign Minister. Welcome to you both. And now I give the call to the member for Warringah.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. Numerous workplaces in Australia have random alcohol and drug testing to help ensure a safe and respectful working environment. Will you commit to legislating for random alcohol and drug testing of MPs, senators and staff in the federal parliament due to the apparent ongoing issues with too much alcohol consumption?
be called to order. No one will interject before the Prime Minister speaks. I give the call to the Prime Minister.
I thank the member for Warringah for her question, and I recognise that it comes from a place of genuine concern. And there have been, of course, issues from time to time in the parliament. But one of the things about our jobs is we're accountable. Every 3 years, at least, we go to the Australian people and we're accountable for what we say and what we do and how we act. And that is a democratic process that is appropriate. I would have thought that we are all responsible adults and we should act appropriately out of respect for the people who vote to put us here. It is a great privilege to be a Member of Parliament, and many people try, not as many succeed. I've had the privilege of being elected to this Parliament 10 times, and every day, I feel grateful and humbled by representing the community where I've lived my whole life in the inner west of Sydney, and being able to occupy the extraordinary position of being Australia's 31st Prime Minister. I don't want to see us be in a position where we say that we are unable to act like adults and to have that the suggestion which is made. So I understand why she makes it, the member for Warringah, but it's not something that I have supported. I think that people need to act responsibly at all times to bear in mind the great privilege and honour that we have of being in this chamber in the various positions that occur, whether they be on the front bench of either side, whether they be backbench members or whether they be crossbench members as well. But I thank the member for Warringah for her question.
Give a call to the member for Spence.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Deputy Prime Minister. How is the Albanese Labor government delivering key defence outcomes and cleaning up the mess of the last decade?
Order. Give a call to the Minister for Defence and Deputy Prime Minister.
Can I thank the member for his question and acknowledge his service? Shortly, the government will be releasing its response to the independent review of our service fleet. And this will be a blueprint for building the most capable Australian Navy in almost a century. But it's important to understand where we're starting from, because we inherited from those opposite the oldest surface fleet since the end of the Second World War. Now, we will fix that, but it will require money and resources. Now, we've heard a lot of noise from those opposite when it comes to defence spending, but they do have a record which is plain to see. If we're to take them at face value, one point they're making is that where they left the defence spend was inadequate. In last year's budget, we increased defence spending by $30 billion of real money over the course of the decade, taking the projected defence spend from 2.1% to 2.3% of GDP. Now, when the Shadow Minister for Defence and the Shadow Treasurer have been repeatedly asked whether they will match our increases, they have consistently said they can't commit. The policy of those opposite is stuck in 2022. But what's worse is that the Defence Strategic Review revealed that in the last 5 years of their government, they effectively cut $20 billion from defence, secretly ripping billions of dollars.
The Deputy Prime Minister will pause. Remember, Herbert was on a warning. He's tried his luck too many times this week. He'll leave the chamber under 94A. If you're on a warning, here's the tip. I'll be looking at you to see if you continue to interject. The Minister for Defence and Deputy Prime Minister will be heard in silence.
Secretly stripping billions of dollars out of defence through a strategic reserve adjustment. When you take it all back, they cut defence spending, we're increasing it. And the empty hypocrisy of what they say has also been revealed with the Red Sea. For the last few months, they've been saying that if ever asked, they would send a ship to the Red Sea. But when it turns out, when they were asked, when the Leader of the Opposition was in charge, they said no. And his excuse is that he didn't know a request had been made. He's asking the Australian people not to blame him. He was just asleep at the wheel. Well, at least over the last 2 weeks on the ABC, the Shadow Minister for Defence has revealed himself as a man of the future. I mean, here we were thinking we needed to be investing in AI and quantum, order, and all the while the Shadow Minister for Defence is preparing to overwhelm our adversaries with overhead projectors and a slider. They were hands down the worst defence government in our nation's history. The Albanese government is willing, order, to stand up, the to lead, and to make the difficult decisions to keep Australians safe.
Give it. Order. The Treasurer and the member for Canning will cease their interchange. So I can hear from the Deputy Leader of the Opposition.
My question is to the Minister for Immigration. Last year, the Minister and the then Acting Prime Minister gave an undertaking to contact the victims of the 149 criminals that the Albanese government released onto our streets. Can the Minister confirm how many victims or families of victims are still yet to be contacted? If he cannot, will the minister do the right thing, apologise and resign?
Order. The members on my right and the Minister for Home Affairs will cease objecting. Give the call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you very much, Speaker, and I thank the Deputy Leader of the Opposition for her question. I've outlined, of course, the mechanism we've put in place to enable those affected to make contact. And I say again that my concern and the concern of every member in this place is for those who are affected.
Order. The order. The Minister will pause. The Leader of the Opposition is entitled to a point of order.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, on relevance, how is it conceivable that the Minister does not have the answer available to him? How many people have not been contacted?
Order. The order, order, the order. The member for Deakin is just going to cease interjecting, so I can deal with the Leader of the Opposition's point of order, please. The Leader of the Opposition needs to state the point of order on relevance. The minister was asked a tight question. He can answer the question as long as being directly relevant, and I want to remind the Leader of the Opposition on page 567 regarding practice of content of answers and being directly relevant. 20 seconds into the answer, he has begun to explain his answer. I'm going to remind the Minister when there are tight questions, he'll need to make his answer directly relevant. And the member for Lindsay can leave the chamber under 94A. I can't be clearer when I'm dealing with points of order, directing ministers. That is not the free-for-all time. The minister will be heard in silence.
Thank you, Speaker. I have contacted those victims who have contacted me, and as I said in respect to the Leader of the Opposition's question, I would be very pleased to speak with the family that he referred to if I had their contact details, and I've asked my office to seek those details.
Give the call to the honourable member for Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Home Affairs. Minister, what have we learnt this week from the release of the Richardson Review?
Good question.
Give the call to the Minister for Home Affairs and the Minister for Cybersecurity.
Thank you, Speaker, and I really want to thank my friend, the member for Wills, for this really important question. Speaker, I've spoken to the Parliament this week about the release of the Richardson Review. This is a review that was called when really significant integrity questions were raised about the history of offshore processing contracts in the Department of Home Affairs. This landmark review shows for all to see that under the watch of the Leader of the Opposition, his department paid hundreds of millions of dollars to companies and individuals who are suspected of arms dealing, drug smuggling, undermining international sanctions on Iran, and money laundering, bribery, and human trafficking. Now, I'm sure there's people in the gallery sitting there thinking, how on earth did something like this happen in Australia?
The member for Deakin is warned.
How on earth in our great country could the federal government have sent hundreds of millions of dollars in the direction of companies that would do things like this? Now, Speaker, we learned a little bit more about how this happened in estimates this week, where we learned that the Home Affairs Department actually raised their very real questions with the minister. They sent a report up to the minister which raised concerns about a specific contract worth $500 million that was going to manage an offshore processing centre, and it was being awarded to a company that had never been assessed for its ability to deliver that service. And in fact, we learned later that this is a company that was headquartered in a beach shack on Kangaroo Island. They got $500 million. Now, these questions were raised with the minister, and any minister worth their salt, what would you do when you receive that? You'd ask more questions, Speaker. But that's not what the Leader of the Opposition did. Instead, he sent back a one-word response, noted. No follow-up, no questions, no investigation, no integrity. Now, Speaker, what it looks very much like from the outcomes of the Richardson Review is that despite all of the questions that have been raised over the period of a decade about the integrity of these contracts and the links to criminal wrongdoing, our supposed tough cop on the beat didn't ask a single thing, didn't ask a single question, didn't launch a single investigation.
Order. So the when minister it finally came. The minister will pause. The member for Groome, I'm sure you've done this deliberately now so you can be removed under 94A. This is not a contest. When you get warned and told not to interject, don't interject. The minister in continuation.
We've heard an awful lot this week from the Leader of the Opposition about his so-called concerns about crime. But when it came time for the tough cop on the beat to do something to fight wrongdoing, did he do anything about it? Absolutely not. He looked the other way, Speaker. And that's how you end up with a situation where the Australian government collected taxpayers from everyone who is up in the public gallery and sent them in the direction of companies that were doing criminal undertakings. And what I'd say to the Parliament, Speaker, is what the Richardson Review shows is that if the Leader of the Opposition was half as tough on crime as he pretends to be, we wouldn't have needed a Richardson Review because he would have commissioned it years ago.
The call to the member for Page.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. Since the minister released 149 hardcore criminals into the community, there have been 27 reports of further crimes committed by them, according to AFP evidence at Senate estimates. Minister, isn't this clear proof that the minister's so-called continuous monitoring is completely ineffective to keep Australians safe? When will the government take effective action to keep Australians safe, including obtaining community detention orders?
Give a call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you very much, Speaker, and I thank the honourable member for his question, although I think I've already answered that question on previous occasions. I say again that it was a decision of the High Court that required the release of those individuals. And I say again, in response to that, we put in place four layers of protection to keep the community safe, including through Operation Aegis, the capacity for state, territory and Commonwealth agencies to work together. We also, as I've discussed on many occasions, as one of those levels of protection, put in place a legal regime to enable preventative detention applications. Those applications, I can assure the House, are underway, noting the concerns that have been expressed, including by the member for Wannan, about the high threshold that is required to succeed in such an application.
The Deputy Leader of the Minister will be heard. The Minister completed his answer. Call to the member for Bruce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Health. How will the Albanese Labor government's tax cuts help healthcare workers keep more of what they earn? How is the government delivering on its commitments to strengthen Medicare, and why is that needed after a decade of cuts and neglect?
Call to the Minister for Health and Aged Care.
Yeah, thank you, Speaker, and I thank the member for Bruce. There are 78,000 taxpayers in the electorate of Bruce, and on July 1st, Labor will deliver every single one of those taxpayers a tax cut to help with the cost of living. And I know the member for Bruce is also keenly interested to hear that every single one of the 73,000 taxpayers in the nearby electorate of Dunkley will also receive a tax cut, like a second-year registered nurse at the Frankston Hospital who will receive a tax cut of more than $1,550, double what she would have received under those opposite. Order. Or a hospital orderly who will receive a tax cut of $862, Mr. Speaker, compared to just $58 under the plan that those opposite had, or just $1 a week, Mr. Speaker. And these bigger, better tax cuts from the Treasurer and the Prime Minister build on all of the other measures that we've been putting in place to make it cheaper and make it easier to see a doctor in Dunkley, Mr. Speaker, like the Frankston Urgent Care Clinic that has already seen 11,000 patients fully bulk billed, Mr. Speaker, or the tripling of the bulk billing incentive delivered in last year's budget. Now, I'm asked about the last decade, and I noticed, Mr. Speaker, the Leader of the Opposition out in the last couple of weeks boasting about his record on bulk billing, that it was over 80% when he was the Health Minister, Mr. Speaker. Of course, he didn't mention he then tried to abolish bulk billing altogether. He didn't mention he then froze the Medicare rebate, ripping billions of dollars out of general practice. But, Mr. Speaker, that's only one recent example of the Leader of the Opposition not being quite straight about the last decade in health policy. There's also an ad circulating, Mr. Speaker, called Peter Dutton Delivers as Health Minister. It's only got two engagements so far, one like and one laughing face emoji. Not sure whether it's laughing at you or with you, but fair to say it hasn't exactly gone viral this far. And another remarkable thing about this ad, Mr. Speaker, is the Leader of the Opposition has got a very big smile on his face, which made me think immediately maybe it's one of those deep fake AI thingamajigs. Not sure. But the most remarkable thing about this is the Leader of the Opposition appears to be taking credit for there being 100 headspace services in place when he was the Health Minister, which sounds pretty impressive if you ignore the fact that 90 of them had been funded and rolled out years before by the Gillard government, Mr. Speaker. The truth is, the only thing this man delivered as Health Minister, Mr. Speaker, is cuts and chaos, and every Australian remembers it.
Yeah. Call to the Manager of Opposition Business.
My question is to the Minister for Immigration. The Minister has released 149 hardcore criminals from immigration detention. The Minister on Tuesday stated that, quote, all individuals in the cohort are being continuously monitored. 18 criminals have been able to commit crimes serious enough to be arrested and charged by state and territory police while apparently being continuously monitored. Minister, what were those crimes?
I give the call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you very much, Speaker, and I thank the honourable member for their question. I say once more, for his benefit and the benefit of all members of the House, it was the decision of the High Court that required the release, a decision that would have applied to any government, as he well knows. And I say also this, that because of the strict visa conditions, including reporting requirements and electronic monitoring for many, the location of every individual in this cohort is known. And I say to those opposite, I want to do everything I can to support our agencies to do their job to keep communities safe within the framework, the four layers of protection we have put in place. And I say, as I said earlier, what the Deputy Commissioner of the Australian Federal Police said earlier this week in estimates, he said this, and I quote, "I don't think there is any difficulty in knowing where they are. They're monitored through the mechanism of those clauses which are placed upon them, which are quite restrictive." On this side of the House, we trust our law enforcement. We thank them for keeping Australians safe.
The Minister has concluded his answer. Give the call to the member for Reid.
My question is to the Minister for Industry and Science. How will Australian scientists and researchers benefit from Labor's tax cuts, and are there any risks to Labor's plan?
Excellent. Give a call to the Minister for Industry and Science.
Thank you very much, Speaker, and thanks to the member for Reid for that question. Her electorate home to many scientists and researchers who are employed in terrific businesses within the electorate. And the member for Reid knows, like many of us do, that Australian science and research will be the key to unlocking a lot of opportunity for Australian industry, a future made in Australia, where we see advances in manufacturing, clean energy, agriculture, through to critical technologies. And we want Australian scientists and researchers to earn more and keep more of what they earn. And Labor's tax cuts that passed the House today will help terrifically. A scientific assistant working in South Brisbane earning $63,400 will get a $1,264 tax cut. An earth science lab technician working in Perth earning $70,000 gets a $1,429 tax cut. And also a lab technician working on soil testing in Adelaide earning $60,000 will get a $1,179 tax cut. The contrast, Speaker, couldn't be clearer. This side wants Australians to earn more and keep more of what they earn. That side wants them to work longer for less. It is a clear contrast. Now, I'm asked about risk, and the biggest risk to our plans is the confusion and chaos of the Liberal and National parties, who wanted to talk about literally anything else other than the cost of living. And when it came to forming a position regarding our tax cuts, they were everywhere and nowhere at once. We had the Deputy Leader of the Opposition committed to absolutely rolling back our tax cuts before she was rolled back absolutely. We had, and the member for Hume, boy, you've had a good week. The member for Hume, our good friend, breathlessly attacking us on Sky News, including a bizarre reference to the PM studying Marxist economics. The Star of Lenin. Friends, the Star of Lenin goes to this man, who has socialised the means of overreaction. Hume. Fantastic.
Order.
Order. Meanwhile, on Nemesis, Tony Abbott blames Malcolm Turnbull. Malcolm Turnbull blames Scott Morrison. Ah, the serial censor.
The minister will cease, will pause, and also, while I've got him, will also direct his remarks through the chair, understanding Order 65A, so that he is directing his comments through the chair, rather than using the term you. The manager for the opposition is on a point of order.
Well, Mr. Speaker, on relevance, I think you can probably guess what I'm going to say. There is no basis in the terms of the question for the territory that the minister is now in.
Yes, I agree with the manager of opposition business. He was asked about risk. That did not allow him to go into the topics that he was going into. I'm just going to order. I want to agree with the manager of opposition business. Just want to get him back to the question to refer back to the risks as part of the question, not a general commentary.
I understand. And I note the presence of the member for Cook, who I understood had resigned. He's Schrodinger Scott, both the member for Cook and not for the member for Cook at the same time. So well done right there. But what that mockumentary pointed out, Speaker, was the complete and utter absence of accountability.
Order.
No responsibility, no, absolutely no ownership. Oh boy.
Order. Minister, order. The minister will pause when the House comes to order. The member for Petrie, appreciate he's trying to assist the House. I do. The minister's concluded, so he can conclude back to his seat.
Great work, Tiger.
Yeah. All right. We'll just bring the House to order. Members are entitled to raise point of order. The member for Petrie did so. I'm just going to move to the next question. The House comes to order. We'll hear from the member for Clark.
Speaker, my question is to the Prime Minister. Prime Minister, a great many Australians would have been thrilled by the House of Representatives, including you and your government, voting yesterday in favour of my motion stressing the importance of bringing the Julian Assange matter to a close so he can come home to his family. Prime Minister, what is the significance of this?
Give a call to the Prime Minister.
I thank the member for Clark for his question and for his genuine engagement over a considerable period of time on this issue that is of concern to so many Australians. We supported the motion yesterday because it is the right thing to do. I have said the same as Prime Minister and conducted myself as Prime Minister in the same way I did as Leader of the Opposition, in making advocacy on behalf of the view that I believe Australians hold across the chamber, including some members of the National Party and Liberal Party over a period of time, crossbenchers, the minor parties, but of course members of the Australian Labor Party, that would have a range of views about the merits of Mr Assange's actions, but have come to the common view, a view that has been put also by the Leader of the Opposition, that enough is enough and that it was time for this to be brought to a close. I have, from the very first occasions where I had an opportunity as Prime Minister, raise this issue at the highest levels with the United States and with the United Kingdom, with people at the highest levels and throughout the structures. It has been raised by our diplomats as well, including the Ambassador to the United States and the High Commission to the United Kingdom, who has visited Mr Assange in prison as well to check on his welfare. Now, people will have a range of views about Mr Assange's conduct, and you and I mightn't agree, frankly, on the nature of that conduct. But regardless of where people stand, this thing cannot just go on and on and on indefinitely. And the Australian government, in my view, always has a responsibility to make representations to governments, as we have for Chiang Lei, for example, in China, as we have with the range of people who find themselves in difficulty, with successes, it must be said, also in Vietnam and Myanmar in recent times. It is important that we have a calibrated and deliberate approach to this engagement. We are continuing to do that, including the discussions that have taken place over a considerable period of time with Mr Assange's lawyers. But it is important, the resolution, I congratulate the member on bringing that resolution before this parliament, because it's important to send that message in the coming days. There'll be a critical period as well. I hope this can be resolved. I hope it can be resolved amicably. It's not up to Australia to interfere in the legal processes of other countries. But it is appropriate for us to put our very strong view that those countries need to take into account the need for this to be concluded.
Give the call to the member for Bennelong.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Aged Care. How is the Albanese Labor government responding to the horrific findings of the Aged Care Royal Commission report and rebuilding the workforce to ensure some of our most vulnerable Australians are receiving the high quality care they deserve after a decade of cuts and neglect?
A call to the Minister for Aged Care and Sport.
I thank the member for Bennelong for his question and acknowledge his continued and ongoing advocacy both for the aged care workers that he represents and for the residents that they care for. Mr Speaker, in 2 weeks it will be the third anniversary of the Royal Commission into the Aged Care Quality and Safety's final report, a 2021 documentation of disaster, a blunt black and white description of failure, a report that described the aged care system under the Coalition's lead as a shocking tale of neglect and one which was unkind and uncaring. And among the many dark themes that were to emerge was that workers were systematically underpaid and undervalued, that low wages and poor employment conditions meant that the sector struggled to attract and retain well-skilled people. And that, in turn, led to unacceptable staffing levels that created substandard care. Mr Speaker, on day one of cleaning up their mess of restoring dignity following 9 years of neglect, the Albanese government got to work to make sure that aged care staff were valued again. And we have delivered. We have delivered an $11.3 billion increase to minimum award rates for more than 250,000 workers across our country. The biggest pay rise for this sector ever. A funding package that is 10 times more than the previous government's investment in their workforce pillar. And now we are providing even more cost of living relief and even more value. From 1 July, Labor's tax cuts will also deliver these registered nurses in aged care a $1,679 tax cut, almost double what they would have received under the Coalition. 97% of aged care workers, Mr Speaker, from personal care workers to lifestyle to kitchen hands to nurses, will be better off under Labor's tax cuts. This cost of living relief will help close the gender pay gap, as the aged care workforce is more than 85% female. Wow. Our reforms have also seen a reduction in the number of pressure injuries, a reduction in the number of physical restraints and significant unplanned weight loss, and improvements in star ratings data with fewer 1- and 2-star rated facilities and more 4- and 5-star rated facilities. Mr Speaker, change happens when the pain of staying the same becomes greater than the pain of making a change. And yet, those opposite refused to acknowledge the pain that they were causing workers. And while our government recognised the need to change, recognised that we can do more to help, and that's the key difference between them and us, Mr Speaker. They provide platitudes, we provided pay rises. And now Australian taxpayers do not want more of the Coalition's chaos and cost of living confusion.
Order.
They want stronger, fairer wages for their hard work.
Concluded. Give the call to the Honourable the Deputy Leader of the Opposition.
My question is to the Minister for Aged Care. Does the minister rule out any changes to the treatment of the family home in aged care assessments?
Give the call to the Minister for Aged Care and Sport.
And I thank the Deputy Leader for her question and for some welcome and newfound interest in the future of aged care and of constructive reform in a sector that, as I have just elaborated for 2 minutes and 59 seconds, was neglected for nine long years under her watch, including, I would note, the Deputy Leader's time as Minister for Health herself failed to do anything substantive about aged care reform. I would also note that some of the thrust of the question that she asked was a reform that they, the Coalition, brought in themselves in 2014 and left completely untended and neglected until their time when they were turfed out of government for their neglect of...
Order, just the Minister has resumed her seat. That was not called for, Deputy Leader of the Opposition. I'm not sure. Has the Minister concluded her answer? No. So I will take the point of order. The Minister's paused. The Deputy Leader will take the point of order.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. On relevance, it was a very tight question relating to whether the Minister rules out any changes to the treatment of the family home in aged care assessments.
The Minister will return, well, is on topic, and she's talking about the policy. Order. The Leader of the House on a point of order.
Mr Speaker, immediately before you gave the call, the comment that was made by the Deputy Leader was unparliamentary and should be withdrawn.
I only heard the end part of it, but I agree. It's not necessary, those sorts of comments, when the Minister had paused and taken my direction. So just to assist the House and to get to the answer, I'll just ask her to withdraw that statement quickly.
I withdraw, Mr Speaker.
And the Minister will now return to the question and be directly relevant.
Mr Speaker, I appreciate that those opposite would love to run an unfounded scare campaign on something like the family home. I appreciate it must be very tempting when they have nothing else to talk about. But what Labor believes is that we actually need to do something about aged care, but that is an equitable, sustainable and trusted sector that puts people and older people back at the centre of aged care. That's what we need to do. So we are not going to rush the release of the report that the Deputy Leader Order. Refers to, nor are we going to preempt any decisions Order. Of the report until we have taken the time to do this properly, because it is something that they neglected for 9 long years on their watch. In fact,
Order.
The Deputy Leader included, when she was Minister for Health, cut funding for residential aged care and starved for the funds that they Order. Need to care for older
members
Australians.
On my left,
and if, after a decade of neglecting the sector for older Australians, if now, after nearly a decade of neglecting this important reform, if they now are showing an interest in care, I welcome it. And if they want to work together on this,
Order.
I welcome it. But if they want to go scaremongering, they're going to need to go elsewhere, because we are focused on options to make
Order.
Aged care funding
simple,
fair and sustainable. This
Dawson.
Was the task force job, and we are doing this in an open way and in consultation with the sector, with older people, with the public and with experts, something they never had the guts to do themselves, I might add. This is about government investing in quality care that older people want, that they need and they deserve, and we will continue to do just that.
Call to the Honourable Member for Chisholm.
Thank you so much, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations. How is the Albanese Labor government helping Australian workers earn more and keep more of what they earn? And are there any threats to this?
Give a call to the Minister for Employment, Workplace Relations and the Minister for the Arts.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I want to thank the member for Chisholm for the question. Member for Chisholm, somebody who's committed, as are all on this side, to making sure that Australians earn more and keep more of what they earn. In fact, the members on this side started the week voting for people to earn more on legislation we dealt with on Monday. Those opposite voted no and were really angry about it.
Order.
Today we had legislation for people to keep more of what they earned. Those on this side proud to vote for it. Those opposite voted yes, but were still really angry about it. Still really angry, and expect people to believe, when you're that angry about a reform, that you're not serious about winding it back. When you move an amendment that says it should be wound back, which is what they all voted for today, that the public's not going to notice. Those opposite...
Order.
That should be withdrawn.
Look, the leader... The Leader of the House, I'm going to deal with this issue. That term is getting more and more of a run. Just the Leader will resume his seat. The practice of this House since 1906 has been that term is unparliamentary. Speaker Wallace on 3 occasions, Speaker Smith on 11 occasions and Speaker Bishop on 23 occasions have all followed exactly the same practice that I have. So every time it's mentioned, it will be withdrawn immediately. But just here's a tip, another tip for today. Make sure that term is not being used in this House. The member for Hume will come to the dispatch box, resume, withdraw that comment.
I withdraw.
The Leader of the House will continue with his answers and be heard in silence.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker. Because we now have the change from what was predicted by those opposite with their spokesperson in Senator Cash when they predicted that our reforms would close down Australia. And what we've seen, when you no longer have low wages as a deliberate design feature of how you manage the economy, what happens? Wages which under them were tracking on average at 2.1%, now at 4%. Two consecutive quarters of real wage growth. We're making sure that people
Order.
Earn more and keep more of what they earn. This government has delivered pay rises through two consecutive submissions to the annual wage review, minimum standards for the gig economy, now law, minimum standards for road transport, now law, job security for casuals, now law, the labour hire loophole closed, now law, wage theft is a crime, now law, banning pay secrecy clauses, now law. Sunsetting those zombie
Order.
Agreements I referred to
the
yesterday, now law. But in response, those opposite have promised, and promised from the very person who might not be able to get a question but occasionally stands up to withdraw his interjections, the Shadow Treasurer. Where no one asked him to use this word, but on the weekend he nominated their package of repeals. He said they would be targeted.
and we all know exactly what the word targeted meant. Targeted against your wages, targeted against your job security, targeted against your safety at work, targeted against measures to close the gender pay gap. Because the Leader of the Opposition confirmed on the weekend they're targeting your time off. The Deputy Leader of the Opposition confirmed right from the start that they'll be targeting your tax cuts. And the Shadow Treasurer has confirmed they're targeting your pay and security, a party over there that wants people to work longer for less.
Could be called to the Honourable Member for Brisbane.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Housing. Minister, regarding housing, how are negative gearing and capital gains tax discounts good?
Give a call to the member for Moreton. Will leave the chamber under 94A. Order. The time to interject is not when a minister is approaching the dispatch box. I want to hear from the Leader of the House.
Mr Speaker, so the second one that we've had today where a question's going to not the Portfolio Minister, and the question doesn't actually go broadly to housing policy. It's very specifically on tax policy. Very specifically on tax policy.
Order. Members on my left. People are entitled to make points of order, just as the opposition have. The crossbencher entitled to make points of order. And order. I'll hear from the Leader of the Australian Greens.
Speaker, on the point of order, two points. Firstly, the opening words of the question were regarding housing. Secondly, if it's the government's contention that negative gearing and capital gains tax discount do not have an impact on housing, then that is an extraordinary admission. That is an extraordinary statement.
That wasn't the question.
Yeah. Look, I don't want to get in a situation where I'm ruling questions out because they're not directed to the relevant minister, but simply a broad statement about something that is not directly related to the minister's portfolio. It may touch on the work that happens in the portfolio, but the policy itself under the standing orders, that sort of question should go to the relevant minister responsible for that policy. The minister can answer the question if she wishes to. If she wishes to direct under the standing orders and practices she made to the minister who is relevant, which is not this minister, but she can take the first part of the question as it was relating to housing. Give the call to the Minister for Housing, Homelessness and Small Business.
Thanks, Mr Speaker. And I do appreciate the question from the member for Brisbane. And I would say to the member, all of the experts say when it comes to housing, the real issue we have is about supply. Every time I ask the experts, they say the answer is supply, supply, supply. And that's what we're getting on with doing. We have invested over $25 billion over the next decade of new money into housing and homelessness supports because we understand that the answer is about supply. Indeed, the Housing Australia Future Fund is now up and established despite delays from those opposite taking their time to support the Housing Australia Future Fund.
It will supply
around 30,000 new social and affordable homes in the first 5 years of the fund and comes on top of the National Housing Accord, which is a further 10,000 affordable homes from the federal government to be matched by the states with another 10,000, on top of the $2 billion on the Social Housing Accelerator, which will provide 4,000 new social homes right across the country. Indeed, our investments are around 50,000 additional homes that will be funded from the federal government, as well as, of course, our commitment, our ambitious commitment to 1.2 million homes, Mr. Speaker, in which we are providing $3.5 billion for the states and territories to incentivise them to make the changes they need when it comes to planning and zoning reform to get more homes on the ground more quickly. We know that we have an issue with housing supply, but the answer here is about adding to supply, and that's what we're getting on doing, Mr. Speaker.
The minister has concluded her answer. Order. We'll hear from the member for MacArthur.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Education. How is the Albanese Labor government supporting students and workers in the higher education system and setting the system up for the future?
Give the call to the Minister for Education.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker. And can I thank my friend, the marvellous member for MacArthur, the great Dr. Freelander, for his question. Our universities are one of the great engines of our economy. Every year they produce thousands of engineers, doctors like Dr. Freelander, nurses, teachers, paramedics and lots more. And every one of them gets the tax cuts that were passed by this House today. A nurse on 75 grand will get a tax cut of more than $1,500. A paramedic on 80 grand gets a tax cut of more than $1,600. An engineer on 90 grand will get a tax cut of more than $1,900. And the people who make all of this possible, the lecturers and the tutors, and before them the school teachers and the early educators, they get a tax cut too. Because unlike those opposite who think that aspiration starts at 190 grand, we think it starts in the classroom. And we want everyone to earn more and keep more of what they earn. We want all Aussie taxpayers to get Albo's tax cuts. And that's what they'll get by passing it through the House today. Mr. Speaker, the fact is that we need more teachers and more nurses and more engineers. We need more TAFE and uni graduates. In the years ahead, 9 out of 10 new jobs will require you to finish school and then go on to TAFE or to uni. And in the next few weeks, I'll release the Universities Accord. It's a blueprint to set up our higher education system for the next decade and beyond. It looks at how we build the skills that we're going to need, how we give more people from poor families, from the outer suburbs and from our regions a fair crack at going to university, and how we help students with the cost of living. It also looks at how we keep our students safe. Because universities are places where people study and where they work, but they're also places where people live. And the horrible truth is that 1 in 20 students report being sexually assaulted since they started university. 1 in 6 have been sexually harassed. Next week, education ministers will meet to consider the establishment of an independent national student ombudsman with the powers to investigate complaints made by students and resolve disputes with universities. I want to thank the people who are fighting for this, who have fought for this for years and years. People like Shana Bremner from End Rape on Campus, Camille Schofield and Audrey Mims from the Stop Campaign, and Renee Carr from Fair Agenda, and many more. The truth is, Mr. Speaker, they are the change makers, and change is coming.
The call to the honourable member for Wannon.
Thanks, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration. On June 5, the Attorney-General received advice from the Australian Government solicitor of the prospect that the government would lose the NZYQ case in the High Court. Can the Minister inform the House as to when this advice was communicated to him?
The call to the Minister for Order. Order. The Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs. The Minister for Home Affairs will cease objecting. The Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs has the call.
Thank you very much, Speaker, and I thank the Shadow Minister for his question. What I can say to the Shadow Minister and all members of this House is that I took every step to keep the community safe throughout this.
Order.
Including fighting this case all the way to the High Court.
Give a call. Order. Give a call to the Chief Government Whip.
Hear, hear.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. How is the Albanese Labor government helping Australians earn more and keep more of what they earn? What have been the impediments to this, and why is it important that members promote responsible policy?
Give a call to the Prime Minister.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, the legislation that passed this parliament, passed the House today, is about people earning more, but also about them keeping more of what they earn. Yeah. And that is important. A tax cut for every single Australian taxpayer. Those opposite, of course, have said a range of things about it before they voted for it. They said it was an egregious error, trickery, Marxist economics. It would crush confidence.
Order.
It would undermine the strength of the economy It would obliterate opportunity.
Obliterate.
They said all that before they voted for it. Before they voted for it. But it's not the first lot of catastrophising we've seen, Mr Speaker. Remember on foot and mouth disease, the Leader of the Opposition said the border with Indonesia should be closed immediately, otherwise we'd be overrun. That would have done enormous damage to our relationship with Indonesia as well as to the cattle industry. The safeguard mechanism, the Shadow Minister, said it would lead to deindustrialisation and decapitate the economy.
Order.
The methane pledge, the Leader of the Opposition, said farmers would have a mass cow cull that would send our country broke.
You haven't been heard from for weeks.
All the IR legislation, the Leader of the Opposition said it would revive the crippling economy-wide strikes, but Senator Cash went further. She said it would lead to Australia to the dark ages and the economy would close down. Close down. And then there was the energy price relief plan. Reckless, destructive, communism, a Soviet-style policy. Catastrophic, one step short of nationalisation. Gas market Armageddon. Before it worked. Before it worked. On refugees, the then Shadow Minister said, who's now up the back, said it would lead to an armada of refugee boats were on their way. Search out there for that. And on aged care today, we had the only political party that's been talking about a change to the family home when they know that there is no change to the treatment of the family home in any of the documents that are before the government. None. So what they do is...
Order. Members on my left will cease interjecting. Order.
This Leader of the Opposition projects all the time. But Malcolm Turnbull summed him up in just one syllable, and he got it right.
Prime Minister's time has concluded.
And I ask...
Order. Members on my left.
I don't need people to move my amendments that are in my name, Sunshine.
Order.
I move that further questions be placed on the notice paper.